Hey, welcome back to another edition of Old School Guns, the podcast that has the news, opinion, and the answers that you want to hear. And remember, we are sponsored by no one. They're too cheap and too afraid to come sponsor us. And we're not on any radio network yet or any podcast network. I guess they're too leery and scared of us. So anyway, we are independent on our own. This is the Wolfman Jack of Gun Podcasts. So here we are. Let's get right into it. Let's talk about Madonna. Madonna put out a music video, basically a gun control themed music video where she, you know, does reenact some gruesome pretend nightclub shooting. You know, it's all about Madonna, a 60-year-old broken down, kind of has been trying to get back into relevancy, trying to get back into the spotlight. And I don't know that what her actual views are. I'm sure this is something she seized upon. She appears to have been pretty liberal in the past, so I wouldn't be surprised if she's has been a gun controller for a long time. Anyway, she's pretty much a fool. I mean, you know, to any young girl that you would know, any young lady, the last person you would say would be a good role model would be Madonna. You know, she's a tramp. She's, you know, has been in the past a drug user. I mean, all kinds of bad things. And, you know, you have to admire Madonna on a commercial level. She saw that people wanted kind of a trashy girl who could sing songs, and she did that in the 80s. And then she put out that really vile, sex-oriented video, you know, music video or whatever it was. That was. But anyway, you know, she hit a niche market. She made a lot of money at it. But when it comes to any kind of social policy or constitutional issues, she's just another undereducated entertainer who thinks she has more influence than she does. So, I mean, this will probably get, this won't even get her 15 minutes of fame. This will probably get her, you know, 2.5 minutes of fame. Then people will forget about it, because largely people have forgotten about Madonna. She's eminently forgettable. I wouldn't, you know, give this even a second glance. It's just Madonna trying to grab some headlines. Next thing kind of related to that is, you know, when you think about nightclub security and of course the one in Orlando was an anomaly, but you know, usually nightclubs have pretty stringent security to get into it. And I would not know. As you can probably tell, I do not spend time in nightclubs, and in fact, I don't know if I've ever actually been in a bona fide nightclub. So I'm speaking kind of from what I've researched and not any firsthand information. Believe me, I'm no John Travolta. So anyway, you know, they have pretty stringent security, and a lot of times you get searched to make sure you're not bringing booze in and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I would assume that weapons are not allowed inside, and they do a cursory search for those, and that's probably a reason you don't have too much trouble in them. You get, usually it's the troubles outside, you know, the people start, they get into some sort of a hassle inside, and it spills out kind of on the street, and that's when people can get weapons and engage in violence, but it's usually not inside. And so you wonder about, well, how does this apply to school shootings maybe? I always find it ironic that the schools that are identified as the most troubled and violent and everything else, in the inner cities predominantly, never really have school shootings. And why is that? It's because they have security. And I mean, a lot of times they run everybody through a magnetometer. They have lots of eyes watching the hallways and things. And they're attempting to make sure that these things don't happen. So you never really hear of it in inner city schools. It's not a conspiracy to keep it quiet. It seems like most of these shootings happen in the suburbia schools that have the very lax security, essentially open doors, and anybody can wander in and out, and they can carry things in and out. And as we saw in this Broward County at this Parkland High School, You have some dyed-in-the-wool cowards. I think they've got that one guy, and I think his name is Drew Peterson, same as the murderer from about a decade and a half ago. And they got him, and then they've got two or three other ones that they're going after for cowardice. They heard shots and they took no action. They could have saved lives. They could have been heroes, but they're cowards. Dyed-in-the-wool cowards. Maybe Kenny Rogers will make a song, like Cowards of Broward County or something. But anyway, if you these schools basically open door things. They have one or two, I guess, rubber gun squad officers there. Nothing, nothing high speed. There's nobody. There's no second set of eyes, third set of eyes, looking, saying, "Hey, this guy doesn't belong on campus. So let's see what his deal is." Or, "Why is someone carrying a duffel bag full of stuff into a school?" That's the other thing I can't understand. Moving long arms around is a real hassle, and some of these guys have apparently done it. They just carry it in a duffel bag type of deal, and nobody questions it. I mean, and I went to very unsophisticated schools, especially growing up, and very small schools in rural areas. And anybody who was on campus that didn't need to be there was plenty of supervision to go up there and question them and stop them. And that would especially have been like former students or somebody who graduated 2 or 3 years ago or even last year. Somebody would come up and say, "What are you doing here? What is your purpose?" And if that person had been carrying a duffel bag, regardless of what was in it, they would have been stopped. It would have been searched. They would have been prevented from going on. And I don't understand why that's not happening in schools today. I don't understand why in every school in the country you don't have a magnetometer and, at least somebody qualified to run the little metal detector thing, that little wand, and they could just do that. They don't have to do that to every single kid. They can just do it randomly. And, not only will it stop things like So I don't completely understand why those things aren't being used and why they're not being used to prevent violence in schools. It just doesn't make any sense. Look at the profiles of these school shooters. They're all kids with severe problems, and a lot of those problems are aggravated by bullying and some of the behavior that goes on in schools, and that's got to be stopped too. That's got to be addressed and got to be stopped. We just can't have this. And there are a lot of other measures they can take, even just having simple locks on doors. So if a teacher thinks something bad is going on, they flip this lock and somebody can't get into their classroom, And we can also talk about, I don't know about arming teachers. I think that's a good deterrent just to talk about. But I think something a little more practical is bear spray and a few other things that could be employed to keep, because not every school incident is going to be a kid with a firearm. If it's a kid with a knife or something else, there may be need to be a variety of responses to handle whatever the situation is. But and that kind of goes hand in hand, the Madonna thing and all that. You really have to look at security these days, because the old axiom is true. Guns don't kill people, people kill people. And if they're not using firearms, we even see in Europe, they use semi trucks, drive it into a crowd of people at a Christmas market, stuff like that. We really have to up the ante on security if we want to stay safe. That's just the world we live in. Some really good stuff coming out of the Capitol. Seems like the Democrats just have a little problem on their hands, and it's those four freshman congresswomen, it's Ocasio-Cortez, Tlaib, Omar, and then another one named Presley. They seem to be not obeying the rules, and they seem to be disrespecting respectful and all the rest of this. And now these people who were cute because they were speaking out, kind of anti-American, talking all this smack and trash. Well, gee, they're just not obeying Pelosi and her rules. And gee, how you couldn't see that coming. You absolutely could not see that coming, Madam Speaker. You know, it shows you the Democratic Party in the House is a joke. This is what happens when you get identity politic shenanigans of, well, we have to have one person who wears a hijab, and we have to have another person from this group and another person from that group. And hey, if they're all female, that's even another group we have. They're more worried about that than they are about what does somebody believe? What is their policy? And how can they govern and govern well? They're not worried about that. They're just worried about this show, this theater of the absurd that the Congress has become, the House of Representatives specifically. I mean, it's almost comical to watch. I still think the funniest thing is the look that Ocasio-Cortez always has on her face. She looks like, and I've said it before, she looks like she's just seen a UFO or something. You know, this wide-eyed, wild stare. And then she makes, you know, really silly pronouncements. And, you know, I mean, she is just meme fodder on stupid things like Facebook and all the rest of it. So it's actually pretty funny. Then you go next and Trump rails against fake news. Well, you know, frankly, I don't blame him. Here's a guy, he gets over 90% negative coverage, and they wonder why. Gee, he's railing against the news media. Gee, you think? Over 90% negative coverage? Come on. I mean, even guys who, people I know, who did not support Trump, didn't like Trump, didn't like his style, because that's really what it comes down to in a lot of cases. Even those people are saying, but Trump is the only president who's ever tried genuinely to fulfill his promises. Usually they pull the Barack Obama, you know, bait and switch. Barack Obama basically kind of ran on Obamacare, and he got it through, and then he didn't do squat. He didn't do diddly. He just said, well, no, Congress won't send me anything. Okay, you know, that's great. You know, that's fine. But he didn't push for anything. He was, you know, actually, he didn't even go after gun control. He didn't do anything. He never even closed Gitmo. In 8 years, he couldn't seem to close Gitmo. One of his big promises. Now, I'm glad he didn't, because I don't think terrorists should be brought to our soil. I'm not for closing Gitmo. But that was something he promised that, you know, he never really delivered on. It was a joke. Like most of the rest of his administration, just a complete joke. So, but Trump is actually trying to get things done. He actually tries to accomplish what he says he will. And, you know, he moves as well as he can. He gets blocked by courts and blocked by Congress, and they're always threatening some sort of criminal indictment in the Congress, you know, and the phony BS Russia investigation. And in spite of all that garbage, he moves forward as far as he can, he's taken it as far as he can. So that's really amazing. But I don't blame him for railing. 90% negative coverage? 90%? Really? And those people have the arrogance to call themselves journalists, when in fact they're really garbage. They're really dirt. Next thing was old Governor Northam, Mr. Blackface. Looks like his special session on gun violence or gun control, whatever BS, whatever nonsense he was pushing, that all fell flat. I mean, they had about, I looked on the internet, I think it was 10 or 12 or maybe 15, you know, different bills that were going to be up, and they were all voted down. It's just garbage. People of Virginia, you really dodged it. I mean, you really dodged. You got to get rid of this guy, whether you impeach him, whether you know, just wait for him to term out or whatever it is. You got to get rid of this guy. He is a bum. He is a complete bum. And his lieutenant governor's a bum too. So you got to get rid of both those guys. It's time to maybe look at the other party. You may not think that they got the ideal candidate, but it's certainly got to be better than what's there. Let's look, in some firearms news. I love this, I love this, I love this. I had the chance to try out the Brownells 25-round 5.56 magazine, the one that comes with the Proto AR. And so I had seen the in-range TV video that they did with Brownells, and in which case Carsata was saying, well, you know, if you reproduce something that gets changed later on to make it imperfect, you still have reproduced the imperfect one with the problems. And he kind of was badgering the guy from Brownells to try to get him to say, hey, this thing really won't work with 25 rounds, because that's what he had heard. Well, as it turns out, I've run a couple of 25-round strings through it, and it works just fine. So evidently, that's just something not to worry about. If you buy the rifle, it comes with a 25-round magazine, and it is good to go, at least in my experience. And I attribute that to a couple different factors. Number one, I think that it's very, very well made. The rifle is very, very well made. So, you know, although it doesn't have the most modern feed ramp configuration, it's certainly good. I also hold it up that, you know, they've got the Ball 193 bullet is very, very, has a very, very good ogive for feeding, and it kind of bumps right into the chamber and goes. And so, the round is really designed for feeding well. The next thing is they've made that magazine out of steel, not aluminum. Maybe some of the problem with the first ones and the reason they didn't work so well was aluminum might not have been the best material to make it out of. The additional stiffness of the steel might have been the cure for the problem. So anyway, if you watch that in range, if you just Google Brownells Proto AR and in range TV on YouTube, it'll pop up and you can see it's where they're talking with a Brownells representative. But the magazine does work, and I think even Military Arms Channel, they basically said it works also. So I would definitely, you know, not have a problem with using that. And I hope they offer that magazine as a separate accessory in the very near future, because it'd be cool to have with some other rifles too. Not quite as long as a 30 and longer than a 20, so it might be an interesting magazine to have. It definitely is great with the Proto ARs. Got to shoot the Proto AR. Very, very nice gun. Very pleasant to shoot. It's very lightweight. It's got essentially A1 sights. When you're looking through the aperture at the front sight, it looks like an A1. Adjusts just like an A1. Very comfortable to shoot. I liked it very much. Really, really nice. Very lightweight. Points well. Balances well. Really a winner of a rifle. You know, Brownells nailed it, and I think they've nailed it on the other ones too. I mean, you know, and as I said in the last podcast, now is the time, man. Seize and get them while they're available. Okay. So let's go to Q&A. And this is my favorite part of the show. I always like Q&A. Getting kind of low on questions. I'm going to have to go ask a couple of my associates if they have anything they want to know. But here's one. What is your favorite carry in the woods handgun? And there's two answers. My first favorite carry in the woods handgun is an ex-Brazilian Navy model 1917, sometimes called the model 1937. It's basically the N-frame Smith & Wesson 1917. In the late 30s, they made a run for the Brazilian Navy. They came back surplus in the early 90s. Were selling for a song, and I got one pretty well used on the outside specimen, but the inside is really, really in good shape. And I run 45 auto rim in it, moderate loads, nothing exciting, and it's just a fun gun to shoot, but it's powerful enough. It's a good gun to have in the woods, it really is, and it's very accurate, even with the fixed sights. I'm not a real fan of fixed sights, but that's one of the few guns that I really like the fixed sights on, so that's one of my favorites. The other favorite I have is Ruger Blackhawk 4 and 4¾ in 45 Colt with a 45 ACP cylinder. And I like it for the same things. If you put 45 ACP in it, very moderate recoil, very accurate, very nice. And if you know, if you're going into the deeper woods or someplace where you know you think 45 Colt might be more appropriate, or if you're using, I haven't really seen them, but I'm sure there's 45 Colt shot shells for snakes. That's a great gun to carry. And you know, there's always a lot of good holsters for that too. So. That's really a good gun. Those are my two favorite woods carrying handguns. When I carry a rifle in the woods, it's usually a little more esoteric. I enjoy carrying older bolt action rifles, and sometimes they're military surplus. You know, this is an endeavor when I do this. I'm obviously not looking for any trouble. I'm not looking for anything. I just like to be armed just in case there is that odd chance that a predator's out there. Because I used to do this in mountain lion and bear country. Never saw them, but I had it. And just a good rifle, a good weapon to have is a good bolt action rifle in a military caliber. A 303 was my favorite. I used to carry around a P14 or a number 5 jungle carbine. You know, other good carry guns that are not military are the Winchester lever actions, 30-30, 32 Winchester Special. Those are excellent guns. You know, for their size, hard hitting, accurate out to whatever distance you're going to see in the woods, and very accurate. So they're good guns, and very slim, very very traditional. The other nice part about carrying guns like that, as opposed to a modern military rifle, say, is you don't look immediately threatening. If a forest ranger or someone sees you, you know, it's not an AK, it's not an AR, and I don't think there's anything wrong with carrying those. But you know, sometimes perception and the first impression might shape the character of the interaction you have with somebody like that. And they see you carrying a lever action, they kind of, you know, see, hey, cowboy gun, you know, just not really, they don't see it nearly as threatening or as intimidating, I suppose. But I don't really think anybody should be intimidated if they see, you know, if you're carrying an M1A or you're carrying an AR-15 or an AK, I don't think they should be intimidated by that either. I think there's a lot of other reasons, but you know, be that as it may, you could say it's a little less intimidating. But I like those guns. They're very nice, very, very smooth shooting. They have reasonable capacity. And again, this is not something I'm going to take where there's anything other than the most remote possibility of any kind of a bad interaction with a bad guy or bad people. This is just going out into the woods and having something just in case. That's all that is. And so those are the guns I enjoy taking in, using out there in the woods. Basically, you know, very traditional stuff that you could have seen 75 years ago, really. I mean, nothing, there's nothing very new or advanced about what I like to carry out there. Very, very traditional stuff. Okay, another one. What is my opinion of the 44 Special? Well, I have a 44 Special, and I bought it years ago, and almost immediately I knew I'd made a mistake. It's a good gun. It's an accurate gun. I bought one of the Smith & Wesson 624s, which I think Skeeter Skelton berated Smith & Wesson enough and cajoled and convinced them that an end-frame kind of light barrel stainless steel gun would be his ideal gun. And it's actually a nice, it's got a 6.5-inch barrel. It's a nice gun and a nice gun to carry, but it's a little too big for a hip holster. And so I got a shoulder holster for it. And I used to use it when I rode a small motorcycle around, and it worked very well for that. I always kind of got the feeling, though, that, you know, it's not a 44 Magnum, so you've got this cartridge that is not a 44 Magnum, and it's, you know, why not get the 44 Magnum in essentially the same gun and have the versatility? If you want to shoot specials in it, go for it. The gun I got, you could only shoot specials in. So unless I hand loaded them and really ramped up the hand loads, hey, there wasn't going to be, it just wasn't going to work out that this thing was going to be more powerful. So that was kind of a mistake. Is it accurate and fun to shoot? Yes. But it's no more accurate than anything else, really. I mean, you can find a lot of good accurate six guns. I just was underwhelmed by it. I mean, and one of the underwhelming experiences was, you know, you don't find 44 special ammo everywhere. It's you can usually find it in gun stores. You can usually find it in the bigger, you know, larger sporting goods stores. But, you know, you really don't find it at Walmart. You really don't find it in the smaller places. So, you know, it is what it is. It used to kind of sting me a little bit. I'd go in and I'd look and I would see 44 Magnum, but no 44 Special. That's when I knew it probably was not optimum. Probably was a mistake. So I am not a big fan of the 44 Special. There's no real target. There's no real use for it. I mean, it doesn't do anything better than anything else, and it's hard to find. I just don't find, there's no target game, there's no gun game that it really excels at that other cartridges just can't do. And even if it did, you're still in an end frame Smith & Wesson, you may as well get the 44 Magnum and go with it and shoot specials in it if you want. I think you could. It used to be they made it in the Colt Single Action Army, and I think you can probably get it in some of the Uberti copies, although I haven't really seen that lately, but I'm sure they're available somewhere. It'd be fine for that, I suppose. I mean, I'm not a big single action guy, and actually there's a related question to that, but you know, when I'm shooting big double actions, it's okay, but it's, I really prefer like a 1917 type revolver, which is actually lighter, gives great accuracy, and has a much better natural point of aim. I think it's just a great revolver. And you know, the 624 unfortunately was not, and I think Smith made it for a few years and then it quietly went away. But anyway, it's an interesting gun to have. Just, it is what it is. Very beautiful gun, by the way, though. That light barrel is beautiful. Just the overall lines of it with that 6.5-inch barrel. Very graceful design with the target stocks. But it definitely was not what I thought it would be. So that's what I think about the 44 Special. Another question. This is related. What are your thoughts on Colt single actions in 45 Colt? And what I have to tell you is, with all the legend, it's probably one of the most popular handguns in the world, certainly one of the most widely recognized and just storied handguns. You know, just, you know, you literally, it's the staple of every Western that was ever made up until about 20, 25 years ago, and they started using a few other things just to be different. Maybe 30 years ago, you know, started kind of with Lonesome Dove and a few things like that. But, you know, that it was just standard equipment for the Western. You know, I never enjoyed shooting it. It's, to me, the gun balance is okay. I don't care for the sights. And I don't care for the trigger pull. I don't know why. It just, some guns are better than others for an individual. I adore end-frame Smith & Wesson. Some people like the K-frames and can't see the end-frames for dust. But I can't really see the Colt. I never really cared for the Colt single action. I never even really liked the design in 45 Colt. I always felt that, you know, the problem with it is that those cylinder walls are so thin that if you're hand loading, there's no real margin for error. Never really cared for that. Always kind of felt that it was a black powder cartridge, that when you put smokeless in it, there was so much room in there. The powder charge just didn't seem as, I don't want to say consistent, but It just, it's not conducive to great accuracy. I think cartridges, that's why I like the 45 Auto Rim and why the 45 ACP, I believe, are very accurate cartridges, are that space, the empty space inside the cartridge case is really minimized. So although you can't load them as hot, and why you would do that with a single action anyway, I don't know. But I think that they're a lot more consistent as far as the burning of the powder charge. And I think that leads, that has got to contribute to accuracy in some way. So I've never really cared for the 45 Colt for that reason. I do kind of like it in a Smith & Wesson Model 25. It's an interesting gun. Just can't get the accuracy out of it, though, that you can out of something else in an end frame. So interesting. The single action itself, I like Ruger single actions, so I'm a little partial that way. They seem to be a bit heavier in the hand, a little more stout. There's certainly more meat in between the cylinders. You also know that the steel is very modern steel. You shoot a Colt from, they're always kind of sketchy about where you should start loading them with smokeless powder. And I actually believe any Colt made before 1920, I wouldn't load with smokeless powder. And that's being pretty. Pretty conservative on my part, but I don't have any old Colts like that. I don't really enjoy them. They don't really impress me. Their cost puts them strictly into the, unless it's a really raggedy specimen, puts them strictly into the collector category. And I like it that collectors can gather them and shoot them and enjoy them because frankly, they don't do anything for me, so I'm glad that there are people who do. I do enjoy the history connected with them, and I certainly appreciate that a lot of the Old West lawmen and even guys up until, probably the 40s carried a single action in some capacity or another. And General Patton carried one, and I think that's very cool. I think it's a very good piece. It's certainly a beautiful handgun. For me, personally, they don't shoot as well. For somebody else, they may be the best, and you know your mileage may vary. But I really don't care for 45 Colt, and I really don't care for the single action. So it's kind of a double whammy there for me. Okay, here is another question that's interesting. What is your opinion of using surplus ammo, especially if you can find it economically priced? Well, if you'd asked me that 20 years ago, my answer would have been very different. But in using surplus ammo, I basically don't like it anymore. I don't like it anymore. There's different types, so this requires some clarification. When you're talking about U.S. military surplus, there's kind of some different shades of that, and varieties. The 30-06 that the government cranked out for years and years from, and really the stuff you saw was really kind of post Korean War on, that was non-corrosive primed. That was very, very good ammo and great, but a lot of that ammo is 60, getting to be close to 70 years old now. So we have to kind of look at that and say, well, that's where, at what point does that become collector ammo vis-a-vis using ammo? The other things that that you can see is, this U.S. military surplus ammo is certainly not economically priced. Even if they find a cache of it overseas, it's going to be pretty expensive. So there's really no cost benefit there. So why use it? And the answer is don't, because you can get much more reliable, much more consistent, cleaner, better ammo these days. So buy M2 equivalent ball for your M1 rifle that's newly made, and you'll be great. I would not go with Ethiopian surplus or some of this stuff. Even the Greek stuff, some of that was okay. There was some Korean stuff about 15 years ago. Some of that was okay. A few problems with that, but I think most of it was okay. But why even bother anymore? If you're going to go buy it, just buy the new stuff. And that way you can always get the new stuff. It's pretty consistent. As long as they keep making it, you can get it. There's, 762 NATO is kind of the same, although, I guess I'd be a hypocrite because I just bought some Malaysian bull. You get a 300 round can. It was economically priced, and that's good stuff. It's not that old. It's good stuff. There's some German ammo out there and a few things. The problem with that is unless you buy a huge quantity, you get it, use it, sight your gun in for it, and then it's not available anymore. So you're going to have to convert to some new manufacture ammo at some point, or hope that there's another importation of surplus. So I just look at it this way. If you want to pick up a can because it's NATO spec and it's good, then go ahead and do that. But you're going to have to convert to commercial ammo at some point. A few things out there. I don't think there's any more 5.45 by 39 surplus anymore. I think it's all newly manufactured Wolf, just as good, cleaner in many ways. And good ammunition, so I'd stick with that for that. Same thing with the other com block calibers. Everybody was all into these spam cans of 7.62 by 54R, and that comes in a bewildering assortment of stuff, and a lot of it you can't use in the semi. You don't want to shoot anything with a bullet weight greater than 150 grains. You don't want to shoot that in your Tokarev or your PSL or even your Dragunov, I guess. You don't really want to do that because you can wind up damaging the gun. They were made for the light ball ammunition, and that's somewhat harder to find. Some of that stuff in the cans was machine gun ammunition, all kinds of things loaded to different pressures. Probably okay in a Mosin-Nagant rifle, but definitely not something you'd want to use if you have one of the rare 1895 Winchesters and 7.62 by 54. Don't shoot any surplus in that. And the modern rifles, I would not use that in any of the semi-automatics. But people were going for it like crazy, and it was dirt cheap for a while. I mean, it was absolutely at almost giveaway prices. Now it's expensive enough, so you look at it and you say, hey, forget it. You can get Tula ammo, 20 rounds for like 11, 12 bucks, maybe even cheaper online. I think I've seen it for 10 bucks online. And that's going to be kind of the better way to go. It's new manufacturer, it's steel case that they're used to, and it's light ball, so I would definitely go with that. You don't find that much surplus pistol ammo anymore. I bought a crate of surplus 9mm years and years ago. I still have a couple small boxes left. And it really wasn't that good of ammo. I mean, it wasn't that consistent. I think it was a little bit hotter, not dangerous hot, but a little bit hotter. And that's, because in places, especially Nordic countries, they load it a little hotter because it could be in the dead of winter where everything's moving a little more sluggish, and they want to have positive functioning. So, the problem is you never know. Are you getting 9mm submachine gun ammo? What are you really getting? Because it may just say 124 grain, 9mm. And there were some broken lady auto pistols that machine gun ammo got fired in, and you really don't want to do that. And that's the other thing. If you're shooting this in an older, especially a classic firearm, or as the show is titled, old school gun, you really don't want to. You don't really want to put unknown ammunition in there. Fire subgun ammo in a vintage Luger that's worth, maybe over $2,000. You just don't want to do it. So my deal is bite the bullet, literally and figuratively, and buy modern ammo because modern ammo is going to be consistent. It's going to be cleaner and it's loaded to specifications that are known, and it's not the unknown that's out there, and it hasn't been stored for years in unknown conditions. So I basically would stay away from the surplus and just go with new, and that's just the way it is. And if you yearn for the spam cans and all that, I just bought some 7.62 by 39 and lower new manufacturer, but it came in the spam can. I don't know why they put it in those things because it's a pain to get it out of there. But anyway, if you got to have the spam can for long-term storage or whatever use, that you can definitely get that also. Again, they have given, this is not, they're not sponsors. I have no association or no relationship with them. But I find that one of the best places to buy ammo is SG Ammo. Part of it is they're geographically pretty close to me, so I get the stuff in a day and a half or 2 days. And, you know, everything I've gotten from them has been first rate, absolutely first rate. So they have a very honest description, and they really execute well. So I would buy from them if you're going to buy. Very, very good luck with them. The other dealers I have purchased from Graf & Sons, very good. I've purchased from Midway. You know, so I'm not casting aspersions on any of the other ones. You know, Cabela's. Cabela's is great because there's a store near me, and they have a lot of good ammo. The stuff they don't have is 38 Smith & Wesson, 9mm Largo. They don't have that. They, you know, and they don't have any 5.45x45. But, you know, everything else they've got kind of got covered. But the really kind of rare or kind of off the beaten track calibers they don't have. But they're good for everything else, and they have reasonably good prices. There's no such thing as cheap ammo anymore. Even hand loading it is going to cost some money. So, you know, it's just one of the expenses of the sport. So, and there's no real way. Used to be you could buy powder in bulk, primers in bulk, cast your own bullets. And that really worked best if you were a pistol shooter. But some rifle shooters would do it too. And you could bring down the cost. But, you know, lead is getting harder to find. And it's harder to find for free, which was what made it worthwhile. And powder and primers are what powder and primers are. And they've gone up in price. They've kind of done a roller coaster thing in the after Sandy Hook, went way up and were hard to find. Now they're easy to find, but They're still expensive. Now here's another question. What is your opinion of the Colt 38 Super cartridge and the guns that chamber it? Well, I like it. It's fun. I do have to say though, it's a lot more trouble to support the cartridge, and you know, it's not something you find everywhere. You can find it in a place like Cabela's or a good gun shop. You know, they're going to have 38 Super ammo, and it's going to be a lot. It's kind of expensive. It is pricey. You can load your own. It's about like loading a 357 Magnum. Not really all that different. I load just the traditional bullets, and it is what it is. In my opinion, it's if you're going to shoot a 1911, you know, shooting anything other than 45 ACP is a real judgment call. I just don't think. You know, now that's excluding a 22 Ace, which is a little different animal altogether. But when you deviate away from 45 ACP, I don't know that you're gaining anything in a 1911. 1911 was designed for 45 ACP. It just seems to be optimized for it in every way. And although 38 Super is cool and it's fun, it's not a 45. So it just seems to kind of be in second place. Third place or 9mm 1911s. I mean, it's just not all that fun. So 38 Super is, a great, fun alternative cartridge. If for some reason you don't like or don't want a 45 ACP, then 38 Super is going to be a viable alternative. There were some countries where you couldn't have that, you know, can't have a military caliber. So 38 Super, never having been adopted by any military, was permissible when 45 ACP and 9mm were not. So very good. But there's been very few guns really chambered for it. I believe at one time the Walther HP. You know, the civilian version of the P-38 right before the Second World War was advertised that it would be available in 38 Super, but that never came to fruition. So very few guns are in 38 Super other than a Colt 1911 style gun. But it's a good gun, fun to shoot, just not a 45, so therefore it is what it is. Okay, and here's one more question we'll do. And this is a good one. What is your favorite unpopular caliber? And that's pretty easy. and I don't know why this is, my favorite unpopular caliber is 32 ACP. I just like the way it shoots. It's light recoiling. It's actually quite accurate, even in the small guns that are chambered for it. It's a lot of fun to shoot. I don't use mine for personal protection or anything. And you can get a lot of really economically priced guns in it. There are a lot of Eastern European CZ-50s and CZ-70s and a few other things that are chambered for it. There are a lot of older historical guns that are chambered for it. Pretty much, it was a pretty popular caliber before World War II. You could find a lot of guns chambered for it before World War II. So there's a lot of different ones out there. That's also what makes it kind of a fun caliber. But, you know, ballistically, if you say, oh, I shoot a 32 ACP, you know, everybody will gee-gaw and laugh and have a lot of fun. Frankly, I don't know that there's a big difference between 32 ACP and 380 out of the kind of guns that fire them. You know, when you're talking about the very short barrel, very short barrel semi-automatic pistols, I don't know that, you know, the actual impact and effect on a human or animal target would be different between either of them. They're mostly, you know, kind of full patch bullets. There are a few hollow points out there, but, you know, if you find 32 ACP ammo on a shelf, even in a pretty large gun store, it's usually going to be ball ammunition, because that's almost what all of them were designed to fire. So it's a fun caliber. It's an interesting caliber, but it certainly would not be the most effective, and it wouldn't be something that you really recommend. But, you know, there is a certain definite elan about it, you know, because face it, James Bond took on some of the worst criminals in the world with nothing more than a Walther PPK 32 ACP and a spare magazine here and there. So, you know, if James Bond can take on some of the world's most vicious super criminals, maybe it's actually a lot better than I think it is. But in reality, it's a good gun. I mean, if you have nothing else, it's something, but it's nothing I would recommend, but it is a lot of fun to shoot, and the guns that are chambered for it are a lot of fun. You know, you're talking the Walthers, the PP, the PPK. There's even, you go back, the Colt 1903 pocket hammerless. That was a huge platform for 32 ACP. Savage 1907, 32 ACP. It just goes on and on and on. I mean, these great fun guns out there that have that were in that caliber, you know, a great variety of guns and a lot of historical guns. Actually, Buffalo Bill Cody did advertisements for the Savage 1907 and 32 ACP, and Frank James, the older brother of the outlaw Jesse James and member of the James Gang, was known in his later years to carry a 32 Colt 1903 pocket hammerless. He called it his Gatling gun. And they, you know, those old West guys, and these guys had started out with cap and ball handguns. You know, they started out with like 51 Navies and 1860 Armies and, you know, Colt Dragoons. They started out with those, and they ended their lives with these cool little semi-automatic pistols that, you know, wouldn't be too far out of place today. There are companies, I think Kel-Tec and a few others sell 32 ACP, you know, small concealable guns. And so, you know, these guys were actually, you know, you talk about living through the computer age and going from electric typewriters to the computers of today. Well, these guys went from cap and ball to, you know, fast shooting semi-automatic handguns, and pretty interesting. You know, it's they definitely spanned an era. So that's definitely probably one of my favorite calibers. Very few militaries used it. I think the French used it in the Ruby handguns they bought from Spain. I'm trying to think. I know the Italians used some 1935 Berettas, which were in 32 ACP. The Germans used a lot, Walthers and the What was this? The sour, yeah, the sour Han. They had a little double action 32, 38H, the sour 38H. That's the one I'm thinking of. They had that, and a lot of, interesting. I don't think the Soviets really use that. They were kind of the talker of and using the old Nagant revolver, which, is that's a pretty not exactly the choice of most gunslingers, but the 32s were out there. A lot of countries used them. I'm trying to think. I don't think Britain really used one, except they might have had a few of the old Webleys around, little blocky Webley automatics that, they were good little guns. Just, I think, private purchase officers would private purchase them and carry them as kind of a last ditch. Or if you were a ranker and you came from a noble family, had money, you might, I guess, buy it and get away with it, get away with carrying it. Other than that, I can't think of too many other people who've actually used it. And after the Second World War, I think it just started to drift away. And there's still a few, but they made so many millions of guns in it, though. That's why the ammo is still around. They're still there, and even up into the 1970s, the German police used 32 ACP Walther PPs, and then they surplus those out. So there's a lot of those floating around, and just a lot of interesting guns. And they're usually, now the Walthers might be are an exception, especially if it's Nazi and marked and all that, and collectors will go after those. But a lot of the 32 caliber guns, the 1907 Savages and a few things, those are still pretty easy to come by. And they're not rare, and they're interesting, and they're not really all that high priced. I mean, you're going to pay, between 200 and 400 bucks for these things. Same thing if you can find the little Webley is about the same way. A lot harder to find it. And actually, Harrington and Richardson made a licensed copy of it, so you can find one of those. But I should think that you could still find those under 500 bucks. The CZ-50s and CZ-70s are very findable. I think they're still selling those surplus, and they're anywhere from around the $200 realm. You might find it on sale cheaper. And a very cool gun, about the size, a little bit larger than a PP, a Walther PP. So they're still out there. I think you hit the kind of the surplus gun sites, and you'll see still see a few of them around there, and pretty interesting designs. But they're actually fun to shoot. I mean, they're worth owning. They're fun to shoot. They're never going to be target guns, and they're never going to be a gun that is going to command a high resale value unless you buy one of the collector grade Walthers or something. But definitely cool little guns, and that is my favorite unpopular caliber. Well, that's it for another edition of Old School Guns. And as always, if you like what you heard and would like to hear more, please hit the follower button or the like button, and you'll get a notification when the next episode posts. And remember, we are beholding to no one, and no one basically can force us to do or say anything. We give you the flat opinion that we have, and we tell you the truth as we know it. So anyway, thanks a lot, and we'll see you next time. This is Old School Guns out.